call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Somewhere within these stacks of papers are the minutes from our last meeting. I would entertain a motion for their approval. Representative Hackbarth moves approval of minutes from April 1st. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, the minutes are adopted. Members, we have two bills on the agenda tonight, our Division Finance Bill and the Omnibus Policy Bill. First on the agenda is the Division Finance Bill. The Chair will move that House File 1754 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. And with that before us, members, I would move the A09-0328 amendment to that bill. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Sure.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. That amendment puts the bill in the order in which we wish to have it discussed. And we'll call on our fiscal analyst, Mr. Soderberg, to walk us through the bill. Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll be very brief because I think everybody will probably recall the governor's recommendations that were given to the committee by the two agencies under your jurisdiction, the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Commerce, because the bill, at least for the agency accounts, pretty much mirrors the governor's recommendations with the exception of one item. The delete all member amendment offered by the chair would not do the governor's recommendation as it related to the file and use for insurance company forms. Instead, it would continue to the current practice for filing and for review and to pay for the cost of not doing the governor's recommendation. There's a fee increase of $50. Both of for the filings. Beyond that, the biggest other change is that this amendment incorporates House File 680, which passed out of here. That you'll remember that was Representative Kalin's bill, the federal stimulus bill. And there are a few changes on that on the bill as it moved out of here. The first change relates to the number for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. Is now available. When the bill left here, there was just an estimate. It turned out the estimate is significantly less than what was kind of a preliminary estimate by the department. It came in at, when it left here, the thought would be that it would be about $13,900,000, and it turned out that the state portion is going to be about $10,644,000 and change. The other item is in the state energy plan portion of the federal stimulus, and that is the funds for the schools and local governments and the state of $4 million change item or change occurs between those two funds. If you looked on page 2 of the spreadsheet, you'll see in the left-hand column under 09, after the, towards the left, you'll see the dollar amount for the respective programs. And that's pretty much it, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Soderberg? members, I think you are aware, I have spoken both with Representative Westrom and Mr. Marble about a couple of bills that are related to the Department of Commerce and do have actually money savings represented in them. I think we do have a general agreement on these bills that we think at least are relatively non-controversial. Those are two bills carried by Representative Dabney, House File 2029 and House File 549, to get those before us. Members, I would move adoption of the A090357 amendment. Representative Dabney, would you care to explain that amendment?
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for moving the amendment. I'm sorry, I could not hear you well, Mr. Chair. Which amendment are we on?
It would be the one representing House File 2029.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the Department of Commerce bill with a small fiscal note. Mr. Murphy from the Department of Commerce is here and can speak to both the any policy issues you may have in the bill and the fiscal impact.
Mr. Murphy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Murphy from the Department of Commerce. We have our annual bill dealing with various items relating to financial institutions, mostly technical things. There's a small fiscal impact. We're proposing to license internet payday lenders, so they would have to pay a small fee, so we've estimated some revenue to the state on that item.
Members, I don't believe we have a fiscal note in the packets, but Mr. Murphy, my understanding is that that would be approximately $7,000 in the first year and $3,000 in the second. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Are there questions for Representative Dabney or Mr. Murphy regarding this amendment? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that the 0357 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dabney, please just remain seated. And the chair will move adoption of the A090358 amendment, which is the other bill I mentioned, House File
529. Yes, it is.
Or 549,
you.
Pardon me.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 549, or the 358 amendment, as you're seeing it, regulates debt settlement practices in the state. In 2007, I authored in this House, Senator Scheid in the Senate, legislation to begin or to renew Minnesota's regulation of debt management. That bill passed out of this body, if I recall correctly, traveling solo at on a vote of 130-0 and passed the Senate, I think it was 64-0. In the debate moving forward on that bill, the debt settlement industry, which is a very different industry than debt management, came late to the table and asked to be regulated. We felt at that time that we did not have adequate information as to that industry. We do feel that we have adequate information at this time. This bill has been moving through the process. We are working with the representatives of the industry and have moved significantly towards their position in several areas. The fiscal note stems from the registration fee. It's a positive fiscal note in that it, because of the registration fee, it does bring revenue into the state.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, maybe the author or Representative Gavney could give us a little more detail. A couple words that just send shivers sometimes. Wanting to be regulated. What are we doing to regulate them, and what is the license fee or the fee that we're charging them now?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom. Currently, debt settlement is not regulated in the state of Minnesota. What we do is require them to register with the Department of Commerce, and then principally we mirror what we've done with debt management in terms of requiring written contracts, clear information to the consumer as to what the structure of the contract would look like, things like that. If I recall correctly, the fee is $250 annually. You'd find that on page 15, line 22. There's the renewal fee, at least.
Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gavney, what is the purpose of needing to regulate them, and what does debt settlement do versus debt management? Are you talking these companies that say, are you credit cards too high? Do you want to settle them for pennies on the dollar? Is that debt settlement? Or give us a flavor of what we're talking about here.
Representative Davin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, you apparently have been listening to late night radio. let me explain first what debt management is. Debt management is nonprofit corporations working with debtors and their creditors to come to agreements to settle the outstanding debt, but also working with the debtor on money management, budgeting, things like that, to try to keep them out of future trouble. Debt settlement has a very different model. Here they ask the debtor to cease making payments, to not communicate with the creditors, to instead put money aside for some future date where there's a sufficient corpus of funds that the debt settlement provider will then go to the creditors and attempt to negotiate a settlement at some discount. The challenge for the consumer and the concerns that are driving some of this legislation is, in the meantime, the creditor's wages can be garnished, the debtor can be subject to collection, their credit score can take a significant hit. There's significant downsides potentially to the borrower in a debt settlement situation, which is why everyone has agreed that some regulation of this industry is appropriate.
Last question, Mr. Chair. So then what are we going to get with regulation? What's that going to do to benefit us? And I think members need... From the sounds of it, we need to understand we're adding one more, rather than taking away one more job from the Department of Commerce and one more license for another business opportunity, we're adding one. So what's the need for it, and why is it going to be such a good thing?
Representative
Davin. Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom. Page 14 includes information and other pages, requirements that the debt settlement providers must divulge in their application, including any criminal history by any of the principals in the firms, things like that, to provide consumers assurance that the folks working with their money and working with their creditors are on the up and up. It provides disclosure for the consumer and things like a written contract for the consumer, so that the information is out in front and the consumer is making an informed decision. It also includes provisions such as the right to cancel if you are not feeling successful in this relationship vis-a-vis your debt. It requires consent of the creditors to be reported to the borrower. It includes structures on fees and payment schedules to assure the consumer that they are getting something for the money that they are handing over.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, who can be a debt settlement services provider?
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, again, if we go back to page 14, the registration, I think it defines it more in terms of who cannot be or who would be of concern. Again, folks with criminal history related to financial fraud or things like that. These are generally for-profit companies. Again, that's a distinction from the debt management, which is generally non-profit companies who engage in that behavior or that service.
Council, I guess wide open, Representative Anderson, if you want to jump in.
I wasn't looking for another job.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note with this, Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, there is. It's a small positive fiscal note because we're establishing a registration.
Do we have it? Do we have it in our packet?
No, we don't. It had not been prepared in time for that, but Mr. Soderbergh can provide you with a copy. And Mr. Soderbergh, if you want to reveal those numbers for the committee, please.
Mr. Chairman, as Representative Dabney said, the fiscal note shows a positive for the state. There'd be a $20,000 in fiscal year 10, and then ongoing would be $5,000 a year in revenue to the state.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, being a services provider, debt settlement, is there background checks for these people who get involved with this? I mean, it says here all the things that they're not. Criminal and all, there must be, with all those kind of things to say, there must be a background check that's being done on these people. Otherwise, you're telling me that they can't be in it because of including forgery, embezzlement, obtaining false pretenses, larceny. There has to be some means of detecting who these people are, and I don't see that in here. It tells me who they can't be, but it doesn't say that the bill is actually going to do that to weed out the proper person to be that kind of a provider.
Representative Dabney. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, congratulations. You're the first person who's ever raised that question of background checks. And it's not something that we have considered. I hate to drag the department in if they're in the room. I don't know what their normal process is, say, with debt management providers, whether they do criminal background checks on either the individuals doing that or the principal of the, in that case, a nonprofit firm or not. It's an interesting question. I'm certainly willing to explore it and get back to you.
Well, Mr. Chair. Just being in public safety, we kind of do a lot of questions on background checks on different people, and then state employees would be no different, I guess, if they're going to be considered registering under the state program as a services provider. So I would think the state would be doing some kind of a background check, and I would think the department would have some kind of a process by which that's happened. So I sure would like to see something.
Representative Dabney, did you wish to respond? Representative Anderson, I think there, at least in many cases in which a background check is required, that's an obligation of the applicant to pay for and provide that. I don't think that we would necessarily have to be requiring the department to do that in this bill, but perhaps Representative Dabney or someone from Commerce would wish to comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Mr. Sexton indicates, as we've discussed, there is a requirement when they register to divulge information about any possible criminal history of the controlling or affiliated party, there is not a requirement for a background check.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, I think that we're pretty trusting of the state then.
Representative Anderson, I doubt that there would be much objection to including that as a requirement if you wanted to have an amendment drawn to that effect. I could be happy to entertain that in the Finance Committee. Is there any further discussion to the amendment? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this amendment? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that the A090358 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Dabney, thank you. We do have distributed the A090359 amendment. I believe, Representative Kalin, that's your amendment.
It is, Mr. Chair.
Care to move it?
I do care to move it. I am moving it now.
And why don't you explain it as well, Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, because I have not yet been asked to, but now I understand that you are asking me to. So I'll end this literalism and just explain that this will amend the language incorporated from House File 680, working with Anderson Windows and the other window manufacturers, just wanting to make sure that window upgrades are part of what we expect to do in our public building renovations, specifically our state government buildings. And I think we just want to make sure that the word windows is included.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A090359 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Johnson, you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. I'm going to move to strike Article 1, Section 14.
That motion is before us. Representative Johnson, would you care to explain your amendment?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members. What this particular subdivision does is it affects significant change in the audit investigation costs for telephone companies and telecommunications carriers. My rationale for deleting is that I think it'd be suitable and appropriate for this matter to move to the Telecommunications Committee so they have a thorough discussion. Whether it's a good policy or not, I'm not entirely sure, but I think that'd be the place to review it, and hence the motion, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson, thank you for bringing this amendment. I think it's a good amendment. I think we should not be looking at this in terms of telecom because they're not necessarily regulated anymore, and I think we should all vote yes.
Further discussion? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify for or against this amendment? Seeing no one, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as long as that amendment went so well, and I did come up to talk to you about this before, and I missed you, we'll just see what you think about this one. As long as we got rid of, on page 8, we got rid of that section, I'd like to look at page 7 and look at subdivision 8, and I would move to strike that as well. And that doesn't have to do anything to do with telecom. It just has to do with auditing utilities.
So, Representative Hoppe, what I think what your motion would be is to delete Section 11.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right, Mr. Chair. Thank you. On page 7, Section 11, I guess we could get rid of the whole section.
That motion is before us. Is there any discussion? I would add to the Hoppe amendment that we did have a brief conversation with the Department of Commerce about this regarding Representative Johnson's amendment, and I suggested that if we were going to delete one of these sections, it might make sense to delete both of them. Chair is somewhat neutral on that, but I thought I would mention that that has been brought up. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hoppe renews his oral amendment to delete Section 11. All those in favor of that amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion to the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Does the department have any comments that I wish to make at this time? Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, is the department coming? Or,
no.
Just some real brief, broad observations, and hopefully the department might be the ones listening, but I would like to see and wish the department would maybe come back to us with information about how they could streamline some of their licensing. Some of the numbers I was looking at was over 200,000 licenses we offer, and I wonder if they ever, instead of renewing them every year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever the renewal is on certain licenses, if they ever extend them out, and we could save workloads and things like that. And so it's just a parting comment that I make, Mr. Chairman. I didn't get an amendment ready for that tonight, but perhaps the department at some point could shed some light on that, look at that. And I know realtors, I know builders, I know persons that have to renew these licenses every year. It gets expensive, and it gets, certainly it's a lot of paperwork. It's reforms like that that I think we could give the public and buy a lot of goodwill when we're regulating and licensing. We've got the Dabney Amendment, which I'm not particularly fond of us adding another business to regulations. I understand there might be need for it, but as we do that, we just got to remember we're creating more paperwork for another business, and small business especially doesn't have the staff to always go through all this paperwork accurately, and it's a burden and it's a headache. And so I wonder if sometime we could look closer at extending renewal periods as one way to streamline or make government work better for the people it serves.
Representative Westrom, I'd be happy to cooperate with you in having that discussion with the department, as long as it's not tonight.
Yeah.
A further discussion to the bill. Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1754, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed to Finance. So, members, we have just one more small item on the agenda for the evening. The chair will move that House File 863 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. With that motion before us, members, the chair would move the A090329, delete all amendments. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Yes. We'll begin the discussion of the amendment, or as the, of the bill as amended, by asking Mr. Eliff to run through to identify sections from the bills that were previously heard that have been included in the amendment. Before we begin that exercise, Mr. Pomeroy reminds me that of the versions of the delete all amendment that have been distributed, some of them have the number that I read, the 0329, others are numbered 863GE2. They are identical. There's just a difference in the content of those two documents, and we are just working off the 0329. So, Mr. Eliff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1 of the bill is from House File 1852, sponsored by Representative Knuth, that extends for 3 years the renewable energy production incentives out to January 1st of 2021. Also provides for additional payments to wind energy conversion systems, provides for additional funding in fiscal year 2010. As what we're doing here, as wind projects kind of get through their 10-year period of funding, they're dropping off, and that money could be used for additional projects. There may be a shortfall in fiscal year 2010. This bill allocates an additional $500,000 if that's needed. Section 2 of the bill appropriates $5 million from the Renewable Development Account to the Initiative for Renewable Energy and Environment at the University, and states which activities can be funded under this grant. Section 3 is from House File 1605. Its relevant changes are on page 3, lines 317 to 320, and specifies that the commission shall provide an incentive for that makes cost-effective conservation the most profitable resource choice for public utilities. That bill was authored by Representative Kalin. Section 4 is House File 1434, authored by Representative Johnson, that creates a transit utility zone along the University Avenue Light Rail connection, and provides for cost recovery of not only the relocation of infrastructure made necessary by the transit project, but also creates a zone for innovative energy activities, which can also have their costs recovered under this section. Section 5, House File 1533, Representative Saylor's bill, that, again, the relevant language is on page 5 there, which allows recovery of research and understanding of energy storage devices for renewable energy projects. Section 6 is also a bill that was authored by Representative Saylor. What that does is allow the green pricing program, which otherwise is scheduled to sunset, I believe, in 2010, allows that to remain voluntarily if the utility so wishes, and specifies the payments that would be made by customers who want to consume additional renewable energy to the company's usual mix of renewables. Section 7 is House File 1425, also authored by Representative Saylor. As you can see on page 7 in the middle of the page, that amends the renewable energy standard, which now says that at least 25% of the electricity generated by Xcel must be wind energy conversion systems and the remaining 5% other. So now it says 25% must be generated by wind or solar. Section 8 is House File 1636, authored by Representative Coolidge-Jackson, which provides the Public Utilities Commission authority to issue refunds under certain conditions. Section 9 of the bill on page 8 is actually the original House File 863, sponsored by Representative Hilty, which allows the utility to carry forward any energy savings in excess of the 1.5% goal that was established, allows those savings to be carried over to the succeeding three calendar years. Section 10 of the bill on page 9 has two changes, one of them on page 10, which clarifies that funds that go to the University of Minnesota Center for Sustainable Building Research is up to $500,000 in the bill. It specifies that the center can do, in addition to doing coordination and administrative work, can also do substantive work using those funds. And on page 11, still in the same section, towards the middle of the page, this sentence is actually based on House File 689, sponsored by Representative Knuth, which allows a utilities design assistance program to consider the strategic planting of trees and shrubs as energy conservation strategy. Section 11 of the bill, substance on page 12, allows the utility that's installing qualifying solar energy projects for customers to exceed the 5% limit that is currently there for using SIP monies to do so. Section 12 from House File 1623, sponsored by Representative Kalin, on page 13, alters the definition of qualifying solar electric project to include energy storage equipment that's used to store the electricity generated by the solar project. Section 13 is Representative Sturges' bill, House File 1836, and the relevant change is on page 15, which requires negotiation between the utility and the project, and specifies a cap on the purchase power agreement cost, and that's about it, really. Section 14 is a bill that was authored by Representative Magnus that for wind energy projects essentially exempts them from the need to go under the certificate of need process. Section 15 continues that bill. Section 16 on page 16 requires a report annually to the legislature from the Commissioner of Commerce in consultation with the Public Utilities Commission that discusses the adequacies, or more rightly, the inadequacies of transmission capacity for the state of Minnesota. That report would be done annually and look out over the next 15 years. Section 17 is House File 1078, sponsored by Representative Thiessen, which says the legislature recognizes that solar and various forms of biomass can play a significant role in helping Minnesota meet its future energy needs, it requires a report that's now required under current statutes to be submitted by the Commissioners of Commerce and PCA to include proposals as to the use of those renewable energy sources and describe how they can help the state achieve its greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. Section 18 is also part of House File 1815, authored by Representative Knuth, which just cleans up some language regarding the what projects are eligible for renewable energy payment incentives. Sections 19 through 28 is Representative Lilly's bill that allows existing municipal power agencies to join together to do projects. Section 29 is House File 480, Representative Rukavina's bill, which allows the Mountain Iron Development Economic Development Authority to either form or become part of a limited liability company in Minnesota in order to develop a community-based energy development project. Section 30 of the Solar Cities Report is from House File 1992, sponsored by Representative Johnson, which directs the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to publish a report and send it to, I believe, the Legislative Energy Committee, or just the House and Senate, yes, the Legislative Energy Committee, that looks at strategies to accelerate the rate of solar thermal and solar electric energy installation in all buildings throughout the state. And Section 31 is a repealer that repeals the sunset for the green pricing program.
Members, if there's no further discussion at this time, we obviously have a number of amendments. There are a number of author's amendments that I think have been discussed with everyone, hopefully. But the chair would move the 8-9 amendment for adoption. Is there any discussion to that amendment, Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to sort through if this utility takes on a new large user, say a big processing plant or something that uses a lot of natural gas. Comes in. How would this amendment affect that situation? Is there an allowance for that? As I read it, it would require this entity to meet a savings of 1% of gross annual sales within 5 years, and then 9 years, 1% after that. If they had a new business come in that required a lot of natural gas use, would have an effect on this?
We haven't had that discussion. This is an amendment that actually was proposed by the utility. So,
my concern
kind of think not, but perhaps Mr. Eliff could help us out with that when he's finished with it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my concern is in my area down in the southwest, we're struggling, frankly, looking at the future of natural gas. We're very concerned about the future supply. We seem to be at the end of the pipeline down there, and especially in Representative Hamilton's area next to me, it's even worse than mine.
Well, Representative Magnus, we may be getting a little ahead of ourselves in terms of what could possibly happen, because this is just, this is just asking for a plan. It's not imposing any requirements, and actually, the origin of this, I sort of had some participation in the origin of this when CenterPoint in particular came to me and said that they anticipated that they would have great difficulty meeting the requirements as they currently exist in statute, and I says in essence, well, why don't you start with what you think you can do, and we'll see if we can work out something from there, and that's what this amendment represents. So it isn't a requirement, and, you know, what might happen in those circumstances, I don't know. But I presume if they work out the plan, they would anticipate that. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I recognize that it is an author's amendment, and I know that you've had conversations with the utility, as I have, but I'm just respectfully myself going to be voting no. I think that that CenterPoint and our natural gas folks probably can do more. I know that the folks that did their study on their market potential, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, are very well respected, and certainly the national leaders on conservation and energy efficiency. However, I do think that there's more that we could be doing, more that CenterPoint can be doing. For instance, I don't believe that they still have up and running an insulation program for residential customers, and I do like the additions of holding their feet to the fire on lines 14 to 17 of the amendment, and I certainly hope that the department takes that very seriously, and I have some qualms about, you know, the work that Senator Dibble and I put in making sure that the 1.5% could be brought down to a 1% floor, and I just I'm not quite comfortable with this yet, but do want to respect your judgment and the work that you put in trying to work something out. But I personally will be voting against the amendment.
Further discussion? That's not a beer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the explanation, because I was going to ask if CenterPoint was here. I do have just a rhetorical question for Representative Kalin. That feet to the fire they're going to hold, would that be a natural gas fire? Would that be a wood fire or a biomass fire, I suppose?
Biomass, Representative Beard.
And, Mr. Chairman, just an observation. I've seen some of the charts from CenterPoint, formerly known as Minnegasco and other names, I guess, that since the 1970s, actually, their sales have been in decline every year. And I know that this is permissive language for the Commissioner of Commerce to work with them on that, but I'd like to know whenever they come back to us with a plan, whether that decrease that we're going to try to squeeze them into doing is a decrease from the decrease they're already experiencing, or whether that decrease that they're already experiencing will be part of that, either 0.75 or whatever number they come into. But when this comes back, I'll be asking that question.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that the H0863A9 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The chair will move the 80863A22 amendment. Members, this is the amendment that represents Article 4 of Representative Downing's bill that we heard just yesterday, which we deleted from that bill. Part of that was the governor's bill, and this particular provision was kind of an orphan there, and we decided to adopt it. We did change the language slightly. I think the main change was just to change the language of conservation projects to conservation plan purchases. I did have a discussion earlier today with Director Glahn about the amendment. He's happy with the language as it exists, and I would move its adoption. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, I note the similar language in Section 16. The amendment here says the
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I'll wait and do that later. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any discussion to this amendment?
No, this is a good one.
Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that the 822 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. And seeing that we're on a roll here, members, I would move the 80863A10 amendment. Members, this amendment replaces the language that is in the bill on page 16 that calls for a study and report to the legislature and the Legislative Energy Commission. I brought this up when we had the discussion the other day that, in fact, what that language, which came to me from the Senate, is calling for is something that we really already do, and we're replacing that language with language that does reflect what we already do. Any discussion to that? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that the A10 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Somewhere in here we have a 28 amendment. And we'll move adoption of the H0 863A28 amendment. Members, this amendment addresses at least to some degree discussion that we've had in this committee in the past regarding the liability administrator and the qualifications that were put in statute that in the previous session regarding the amount of experience that any candidate for that job would be required to have. I think the conclusion of the department was that the qualifications were so stringent that it would be next to impossible to hire anybody take that job, and so what we have been experiencing for the interim since that bill was that statute went into effect is that we have Deputy Commissioner Vaughn and Director of the Office of Energy Security Vaughn, and also Acting Reliability Administrator Vaughn, and we're just trying here to hopefully save him a little time in introducing himself before the committee. Any discussion to this amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if we might want to write an experience that we might want the Reliability Administrator not to have, for instance, legislative experience, for instance, maybe a few terms on this committee with particular expertise in renewable energy and coming from Western Minnesota. But I trust your judgment on that one.
Well, I...
Mr. Chair, I apologize for my lack of subtlety. I was hoping that Representative Magnus would pick it up. But,
we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, Representative Kalin. Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A28 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. And finally, for the chair, I will move the 80863A26 amendment. Remember, what this amendment does, it picks up the standardized contract language from Representative Falk's House File 357, and it also includes the appropriation from Representative Falk's House File 708 with a 10% reduction, which I told the people from CERTS way back when we were discussing this issue that they should expect. So that's the amendment. Any discussion? Representative Beard.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your good attempt at making this a thumbs-proof amendment. But on line 122, that transfer from the utility referred to there, is that from their cash storage payment, or is that just right out of their general fund?
That's from the Renewable Development Fund, Representative Beard.
Okay. And then I'm just noticing we just did an amendment, Mr. Chair, that, or do we, no, it's in the DE amendment, that $10.9 million annually comes from that fund also for the REFI payment.
That's correct.
And then there's a mess for the Renewable Development Fund, too, that comes out. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that the A26 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Representative Falk, A27 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A27 amendment.
That motion is before us. Would you like to discuss or explain your amendment, Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a portion of House File 357. It's the requirement that our utilities in the state of Minnesota must purchase 200 megawatts of small projects, less than 5 megawatt projects. The pricing mechanisms have all been removed, so these are free to be negotiated however they see fit, and that should remove people's concerns because we have heard extensively that the price was the issue. So this amendment is a requirement that in addition to whatever else utilities are doing, they have to buy 200 megawatts of small projects between, or contract to buy between now and December, or the date of enactment in December 31st, 2010. And the main reason for that is to try to direct as much of this stimulus money, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act money, the otherwise the investor tax credit, which can cover up to 30% of project costs. So it's one of the ways to facilitate that. In addition, these projects, like I said, they have to qualify for some type of incentive program, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act being one, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Energy for America program another, or other renewable energy incentive program, of which I would feel the production tax credit currently would be one of those incentives. So we are just directing our utilities in proportionality to the electricity sold within the state that they have to buy their share of 200 megawatts of smaller projects.
Discussion of this amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, we're scrambling here. We just got this light on our desk. How does this fit into the one we just passed, 826? And pardon me for what may turn out to be an ignorant question. I'm just, give me a moment here to read these, or give us a moment, and we'll... So apparently...
And Representative Beard, I did discuss this amendment with Representative Westrom earlier today.
Okay. Mr. I guess the first question is on the amendment we just passed, A26, page 2, line 29, insert section 3, so on and so forth. And the A27 is the same thing.
529 section 3, only it's a different section of the piece of statute, I see. Mm-hmm. Must be numbered right behind it, I suppose.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ellis, do you want to explain the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the kind of administrative work goes here, since we never know what amendment's going to get adopted and which won't, we just put these sections where they should belong, kind of sui generis. Well, we just kind of look at it and put it where we think it belongs, regardless of what else might be passed or not passed that evening. Thank you. The other point I wanted to make, Representative Beard, is that the 826 amendment, the call for standardized contract was with respect to seabed projects.
Mm-hmm.
This section doesn't mention seabed projects at all.
Representative Beard,
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. What I want to say is that that's why I wonder what we're up to here. What's going on? But I don't mean to insinuate anything, but...
The rationale here, Representative Beard, is that I think that we did have pretty general agreement that we would like to see, if possible, a smaller wind energy project developed around the state. The objection that we heard most frequently and loudly to from the utilities to Representative Polk's House File 357 was that it included a pricing mechanism that mm-hmm. they thought was at best unreasonable. So,
not only in utilities, that was
what this amendment would do then is just remove any of the pricing consideration. Ask that the 200 megawatts of small projects be developed, but at whatever price could be negotiated. The reason that this is being brought forward now, as Representative Falk, I believe, mentioned, is that there's kind of a window of opportunity regarding the federal stimulus money and 30% credit for projects that are up and running by December 31st, 2010.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm thinking is this is going to be about 40 projects then in the next 16, 18, maybe 19 months or so. Is this in any way going to be getting in the way of accomplishing the 200 megawatt mandate that's there already? Or are we going to be okay with that? Because remember, there was some discussion about, with the best of intentions, we were tripping over ourselves on a mandate we'd already laid down. Would we be okay with that?
We have had that discussion. I should ask Representative Fall to address that question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Spears, your question is that it would slow down other progress, or?
Yes.
We've put this is in addition to whatever else is going on. Now, these megawatts can be counted for the RES because they are qualified renewable energy. So we could be talking about an additional if there are deserved progress perfectly going forward. But in whatever else the utility's current plans are, that they can go forward with them. In addition, they have to do 200 megawatts of less than 5 megawatt projects in aggregate across the state in proportionality to each utility's electricity sold within the state.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the question I've got is, do these projects of this size, do they have to have them have to go through the MISO approval system?
Representative Magnus, they do not, and that's one of the reasons that we thought that if we had had this provision in place, that it would make it possible for some of these to be developed within that time frame, whereas larger ones would be very hard pressed to do that.
Thank you. That was my understanding, too.
Representative Webster?
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, these actually won't be seabed projects necessarily. And secondly, are we doing anything to try to distribute them somewhat throughout the different areas of the state, or can they all land up in your district? And last, coinciding with this question, have you done anything or thought of anything to maybe limits of one pig at the trough for each project, and I say that in seriousness, not in making fun of anyone, but I know some projects in the past, it gets to be that the first five people that become familiar with the program become the quote millionaires that the utilities talked about, and the idea of spreading the opportunities throughout the area, have you thought of anything like that, or would you be open to that? In that, maybe if they've invested in one of these projects that qualifies under this, they can't go to Magnus's district and board out some of his constituents too.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom. We changed this so that there don't have to be seabed projects. In likelihood, many of them will be seabed projects because these are the smaller community-based or community-scale projects. The idea for geographic distribution throughout the state would be that you're plugging into distribution lines to avoid the MISO process, and then as a result, you have to disperse these throughout the state because you can only put so many small projects into a particular substation before you're going to start having to either upgrade the substation or pushing that power onto the transmission system. So with sticking to the distribution system, we're looking at distributing these. Is there some comfort language with geographic dispersion that you think is needed or necessary?
Well, Representative Falk, Representative Westman, the language in the amendment as it exists reads that an electric utility must undertake such projects in approximate proportion to its share of the total amount of electric energy sold within the state. So it would be apportioned to the various utilities across the state. These projects could not be concentrated within one area.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I don't know if I would fully embrace that idea, in that someone in my district who's got an Otter Tail line flowing through could be doing a project for Xcel and just using Otter Tail's lines to transmit the power, or vice versa. So I think it might get there. I'd like to think about it a little longer. I might, more to the point, last point I made, Representative Falk, how do we avoid the fastest five from just duplicating this model throughout areas that they all of a sudden get to be the five winners, versus limiting it to one per person or one per investment group?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, we had talked about having this be limited to the seabed statutes previously, but I think it was brought up in Commerce Committee that people had some issues with that. And so we're looking at the mechanism, and to go into each of these communities, you have to find a community partner. That person, we want to encourage, we've been doing a lot of work out there with the sweet spot studies, which passed, I think, as part of the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act, going out and educating people about how to organize community projects. We have to trust that people in our communities, too, are going to take the steps to help and get involved in these projects. And so I don't know what additional reassurances you would like. I guess part of it is if we're letting the market work in one sense by seeing which projects come forward, how they're bid, what the prices are, and letting the utilities negotiate those costs.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to belabor this. Representative Paul, I guess what I would say is I'd be happy or like to work with you potentially on this as it moves for some comfort or clarifying language. And let me just remind the committee members of what comes to mind. And Representative Gunther is not here. He certainly can remember this because it was his in his area and Representative Magnus's area. But Mr. Chairman, about 4 years ago, if you remember, we had this phenomenon that became the red list versus the blue list of people that got in,
yeah,
in before the other person, and all of a sudden the ones that got in a day late, a week late, a month later, the program ran out, and they said, hey, how come that person gets ahead of me, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what I know it happens, and there gets to be some that are learned of the program a little bit later than somebody else, and they feel that they should be part of it. And so that's, Mr. Chairman, where some of my concerns come from, as well as maybe there's a way we can then just ensure that from the beginning, that the intent is to take advantage of this once, not five times over.
And Representative Westrom, I think we're all on the same page here, and be happy to work with you and Representative Falk to try to tighten this up and find some way to do it.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Further discussion to the amendment. Representative Beard.
Are we still on this 827?
We are.
Because, yeah, I do. Are we going to have anybody from the audience testify for or against these amendments?
That was the next question.
Good. Thanks. Because I got a couple questions with a couple people who have serious questions about it. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion from the committee, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Sullivan. I'm representing Missouri River Energy Services here today. Now, I just like everybody, I've read this very quickly, but I do have a number of concerns, or specifically a couple concerns. Missouri River right now has two seabed projects. We have a seabed project, 20 megawatts in Marshall, and then we have a 15 megawatt seabed project in St. James, Odin area. And on my read of this language right here, if you look at all of the seabed currently installed in the state, we have about 30% of the seabed in the state right now. My read of the language right here is that we would have to build a 5 megawatt or smaller seabed project just to comply with this.
And Mr. Sullivan, testimony earlier, when Representative Falk described the amendment, there's no seabed language in the amendment that's before us.
Well, I understand that there's no, I mean, it doesn't say seabed, but the practical intent of it is to have seabed-like projects built. So I still maintain that under this language, we would have to build a 5 megawatt or smaller project that looks an awful lot like a seabed project. And that's my concern.
Representative West.
Mr. Sullivan, is your concern that you've met your RES and you would now have to build beyond that potentially, even if it's not your most competitive source of power?
No. No, my concern is that, Mr. Chair, Representative Western, my concern is that it doesn't appear fair that Missouri River right now we have a very large portion of seabed. I believe that more than 70% of our renewables in this state is coming from our seabed projects. So my concern is it's not fair that we would have to go well above and beyond portion is of you know, retail sales in the state to just meet this, just to build something to meet the language here. Does that answer your question?
It does, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weston.
My next question might be to you, though, when you're talking fair, you're essentially going to be going ahead with other projects to meet your continual need for the RES, and wouldn't this fit into that plan or picture anyways, or would this not necessarily match that plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, if I understand the question, we are going ahead and building, or we are going ahead and contracting to meet our renewable energy standards, but I don't at the moment think that it's not necessarily, our compliance with the renewable energy standard would not necessarily be within the time frame of the compliance of this
language. Does that make sense?
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. That was going to go along the same lines as we've laid some pretty stiff mandates here the last couple of years on the electric sector in particular, and I know the company Mr. Sullivan represents is ahead of the curve at the moment. There is a in the last committee, Mr. Chairman, we got free votes for having cell phones ring. If we were talking, we got a free vote. No, thank you.
Well, Mike, I thought you had just arranged for musical accompaniment.
All right. What are we doing here again? Oh, yeah, I remember. See, it doesn't look like it's seabed, but it just doesn't look like seabed. I guess my question, Mr. Sullivan, is we're giving you some mandates and some steps to accomplish. I think you're in the 25 by 25 category. So at this point, you're renewable. You're on track or you're ahead of track. And how are you doing on the requirements that we have? Well, on your seabed requirement as a percentage of your retail sales, you're way ahead of the game on that.
Right.
And then mention about how you're doing on your progress towards the 25 by 25.
In June of this year, we will be at more than 10% renewable under the REF. So we are meeting our 2011 requirement, or 2012 requirement rather, in June of 2009. So we're well ahead on the REF, which goes to my point answering Representative Westrom's question. On seabed, Missouri River Energy Services represents 1% of retail sales in the state. And if you were to base that on the original 800 megawatt seabed goal, our current seabed on the ground is about 4% of the original 800 megawatt seabed goal. So we are well ahead of, if you look at it just proportionately, we're well ahead of where we need to be.
Well, go ahead, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Beard. Go ahead and follow up.
Along that line then, so we've got here the A26, which dealt with seabed. Apparently this particular company, I'm sure we're going to hear from a couple more, has already more than accomplished the seabed mandate. I'm starting to feel the frustration of all the mandates we've laid down for cross purposes are at, but I'll try to stay on track here. The A27 amendment, which is looks like a seabed, but apparently it's not, is now requiring that we're going to have them buy it in chunks of 5 megawatts or less. So that apparently this company is going to have to reopen plans. I'm sure they've already got contracts underway to continue on the renewable energy standard we put them through over the next several years. But would it be possible, I suppose, Mr. Sullivan, just to go out and put up a couple of 5-megawatt machines, since it doesn't apparently have to be seabed now? You could just find some small contracts, or if you get a next 100-megawatt farm, just fluff off a couple of 5-megawatt corners of it and maybe try to get that done by 2010 and fit the mandate. Do you think you could squeeze that into your plan?
Mr. Sullivan, before I respond, just to follow up on what Representative Beard asked, my recalculation here suggests that your share of this requirement would be 8 megawatts.
Okay.
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to answer Representative Beard's question first, I suppose we could do that. It doesn't seem to me that that would fit within the, it doesn't seem to be within the purpose of the seabed language.
But it's not seabed.
But it wouldn't be seabed. Right. Right. I, if I'm understanding your question correctly,
Mr. Chairman, let me let the witness off the hook.
The
point of the question is that this doesn't make any sense. That's my point. We're trying to get around the seabed discussion we had the other day by not exactly making it seabed. Now all of a sudden we've got a magical renewable standard that's just 5 megawatts.
So Florida Power and Light can come in and throw up 20 or 30 of these, 40 of them to be exact, 40. And we would accomplish the 200 megawatt mandate as I'm reading this amendment as I'm sitting here at this very moment. That's my point. My point is we're going to make these folks who are bending over backwards to accomplish the will of this body jump through some more hoops, and I'm trying to grasp for just exactly what the intent of this particular amendment is. I had a snowball's chance of understanding what the last discussion was when we had day-ahead rates and all that stuff. We could understand that one. This one, I'm not sure I understand what the intent of this is. If it's just to break it up into 5-megawatt chunks so we can, somebody can seize the investment tax credit, well, there's a lot of wealthy folks out there, I suppose, that could do that. I have a hunch that wasn't the intent, though. So I guess I don't have any more questions at the moment for this witness. Thank you.
Well, Representative Beard asked for the intent. I don't want to speak for the author, but my understanding of the intent was, first of all, to accomplish some distributed generation that would actually enhance the reliability of the grid, which the provision that I pointed out earlier, I think, would at least go some way to accomplishing. And since we couldn't find any way that was acceptable to anyone to require that these be seedbed projects, the distributed requirement plus the size requirement, the hope, I believe, and the intent was that this would at least cause some of these projects to be seedbed projects. And the idea being that going a little bit in the direction we want to go is better than nowhere at all.
When you're ready for some comments and distributed generation, perhaps another amendment.
Not sure we have any others that to which that would be relevant. Does anyone else want to testify? Mr. Sullivan, did you have any further remarks?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Mr. Lodge.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Laura Lodge from Otter Tail Power. About 6 weeks ago, I brought to the attention of the committee the potential for wind producers, renewable energy producers, being able to take advantage of stimulus money under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. And it was my assumption at the time that Section 1602 references grants in lieu of production tax credit or investment tax credit. And my company's been interested in this section of the stimulus bill for its own purposes, for owning wind. And we've discovered that the path for achieving eligibility is not well laid out at this point. We're in contact with folks at the U.S. Treasury on a weekly basis, and there are a lot of people who are not in place yet at Treasury since the new administration's come to power, and the application forms and that sort of stuff are not even available to anyone as far as we know. So my concern is with a couple of things. Can the people who would be determined to be eligible under the Stimulus Act, would they be able to navigate all of this before December 31st of 2010? I realize that's a deadline for everyone. And we have a couple of categories of customers that we're concerned about might not meet this requirement. First is our net metering customers, and George and I have talked about these. We have a number of small wind projects that are owned 100% by small producers. They own one tower, and we net meter them, we call it. But under this piece of statute, I don't think they would be eligible, at least as far as the discussions that George and I have had. And the other category are the tribal projects. We've got a couple of small tribal projects. I don't know if they're tax-paying entities. I don't know if they qualify by the standards of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. So I'm just bringing those to your attention just in case there's any other ones. Other companies may have concerns about qualifying for those as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are my comments.
Any questions for Mr. Glossard? Seeing none, thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Glenn Skarbaka with Great River Energy. Just want to speak real briefly about timing. As I look at this timing, I think would be the concern whether projects in this quantity are really going to be able to achieve the deadline called for in this bill. And my main concern there has to do with interconnections. I guess with all due respect, Mr. Chairman, it isn't quite true that that none of these projects would be subject to the MISO process. The way it works is that if a project comes in and is proposed to connect to a distribution system, that distribution system contacts the transmission system that they're connected to, and they do a very quick look at it to see whether there's a probability that that distribution-connected project will impact transmission or not. If it will, then it does need to go through the MISO process, and that, despite the reforms at MISO, could be difficult to achieve in the timing called for here. So I think the projects that could realistically be done would be those that are already in the MISO queue, if they're subject to the MISO queuing, or projects that are located in portions of the distribution system that don't impact transmission, either if that determination has already been made or if they make an application and they're successful in showing no impact to transmission. So I just point that out as an information for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Skarbaka. Are there any questions for this witness?
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Norton, did you have a question? Oh, sorry. Thank you. We maybe mistook that motion. We'll let the minutes reflect that, Representative. Is there any further discussion? Representative Taylor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think there's a question for you, Mr. Chair. If you I've been thinking about in the first weeks that I served on this committee, I recall the sweet spot study that was done. I'm just wondering if your memory is any sharper than mine about what some of the potential for accessing the grid without going through the having to have an interconnect agreement. I share some of the concerns that we've heard, but I recall that there's significant potential out there across the state in various areas to connect. Is that, am I correct in remembering that?
I think that is correct, yes.
And I think, Mr. Chair, that one of the things that we do sometimes, we lose some institutional memory, we do studies and then forget about them, and I think that we should take a look at that and really and make sure that resource is available to developers around the state as well, that we can, I'd like to see as much of the smaller projects happen that where they can be community owned, whether they're seabed or not, can have some community stake or certain community benefit, but I think they're going to be more cost effective if they don't have to go through the rigorous process. So I'd like to dig up that study and make sure that that those facts still hold true. And I appreciate Representative Falk working to address a lot of the concerns, and I think at this point I'm inclined to support it, but I do think we should keep working on it.
Well, Representative Kalin, I think it's obvious from the comments, particularly of Mr. Fogtogin, Mr. Skarbaka, that there are ongoing issues that have to be dealt with. I don't think that we have a record of being unreasonable about these things. Representative Westrum has expressed concerns that I think are very legitimate and that we would attempt to work with going forward. I think this is the best shot that we have at the moment of moving in a direction that I think most of us would like to go. And that's as much as I can say about this. Any further discussion? Representative Beard.
If I may, and I won't belabor the point here, you can withdraw it or we can vote on it or whatever, but
send me from the towns already.
But seriously, this is serious work. You know, we One of the reasons we have excelled over the years in this northern cold state that's at the end of the road is we've had remarkably consistent, reliable, and economical power. I'll just say cheap power. It's been cheaper than almost anywhere except maybe the Bonneville Dam Project or TVA, perhaps. But, you know, these people require long lead times. We make them jump through hoops and take years to site a plant, apply for certificates of need, figure out how they fit into the grid and the need. I mean, think about the load centers where the stuff is required. And part of my angst here is that we keep making this stuff up on the fly, and we're dealing with multi-billion dollar infrastructure that takes years of lead time and very careful public input to get anything done, to keep the lights on, to keep the power reliable, and to keep it economical. And this is an important economic backbone of this state. So pardon me if I sound like I'm a little passionate about this. But one of the things that really gotten the angst or the heartburn, as I've said the last several months, is that we keep making this stuff up, it appears to me. We get a good idea and we think, oh, we'll just do it. And we don't clearly and completely vet the program. Case in point is Representative Kalin just talked about the sweet spot study, and I know there's been discussions about distributed generation. We need to have that discussion. But doggone it, that's a discussion we need to have over several days with a lot of input, not just because somebody wants 5 megawatts of wind strung along a power line somewhere. That just doesn't work, and the people that we're afflicting with this mandate, it's not respectful of them and their expertise, and particularly of their customers, in my opinion. So the sweet spot study did talk about certain places along existing transmission where you could put up generation. However, if I remember, just so by the way, it wasn't in 5 megawatt chunks. It was more like in 50 or 60 megawatt chunks. And we could figure out how we could site biomass or a group of windmills or something in certain areas so it could fit the existing infrastructure. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to talk all about those details, but what I'm going to say is this is an industry that requires long lead times and very careful thought and planning, and I'm sorry, but I think we've been whipsawing them over and over again the past couple of years here. And so I'm going to ask that we vote against this. Distributed generation is a discussion we need to have. We need to talk about productivity. I'll tell you about my experiences in China last spring when I was gone for 2 weeks with their distributed generation. And we can have other people come in, talk about this. So I'm just going to respectfully ask that we vote against it, but I don't like voting against my friend, Mr. Fox. If he'd withdraw it, I'd be grateful.
Representative Fox?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, Christmas won't come early for Representative Beard today. I'm going to keep the motion as it is.
Say no further discussion. Representative Falk renews his motion that the A27 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Division being called for. All those in favor of the A27 amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Being 11 ayes and 5 nays, the amendment is adopted.
Sometimes the 5 nays were a little more passionate.
Must be ratepayers.
Representative Kalin, I believe we have your A5 amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
And Mr. Motion is before us, Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, this amendment relates to the qualified solar projects on page 12, and I ask that everyone here grab their chair for a second so as not to fall over, but this represents cooperation, collaboration between the cooperative utilities and myself. I know that it's rare around here, but Mr. Sundberg pointed out that that the SIP changes we made make lines 15 to 17 in existing law on page 12 essentially obsolete, since we're doing conservation and efficiency as baseload, and want to treat all of our utilities the same, since we now treat them, or for the solar qualified solar projects under SIP, since we all treat the utilities the same now under all SIP programs. And I do appreciate Mr. Sundberg bringing this forward, and I think it'll clean up the statutes and make them more accessible to the public.
Any discussions of this amendment? Seeing none, Representative Kalin renews his motion that the H0863A5 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Westrom, are you ready to
I am, Mr. Chair.
Amendment?
Mr. Chair, you've been on a roll, so I urge members to stay on the track. but Mr. Chair, I say that in seriousness. The amendment you had, or whoever offered it, Representative Downey, my amendment is actually quite similar to that concept, except with electricity instead of natural gas. Mr. Chair, over the past year, maybe a couple of years, I think I've heard this from utilities in different settings or conversations, that they at least some have indicated some interest to me or willingness to using some of their SIP efforts and dollars towards renewable energy projects. 2 years ago, we did, I think it was two years ago, yeah, we did the overhaul with SIP. And so essentially what my two amendments do, but I'll focus on the first one first.
Then you haven't moved to...
I'll move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair. I think it's A2.
Yes.
And Mr. Chair, what it would do is allow utilities to put count towards their SIP contribution the last 0.5%, between the 1% and the 1.5% of their contribution, if they invest in, work with developers on a seabed project that is baseload energy. In my district in the last year, we've had two, in my district, and I think one's in Representative Falk's district, we've got two methane digesters that are at a large dairy farm operation starting to work. We do have some samples of ideas that can go out there, and so this would essentially say, utilities, we know you're having, we know that last 0.5% especially is tough to make. Several have expressed that to me privately. My local municipal has expressed that to me. And if utilities want to partner and become part of these projects and help foster and make them happen in our communities, Mr. Chair, I think we ought to give them credit. If they're displacing the electrons that some don't like and replacing them with renewable electrons, they meet their RES, it helps make these happen in our local communities, and so that would be the idea behind this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question, I think, for Mr. Elis. Only because it's not written in the text of the amendment. Representative Westrom referenced the counting above the 1%. And if you could just refresh my memory, whether this would be the 5% expenditure obligation or the above the 1%, or is it both?
Just reading the amendment, it says up to 5% of the utility's conservation spending obligation or any amount expended in order to satisfy a utility's energy savings goal. So there's a cap on how much
CIF spending can be directed towards these ends, but no cap with respect to the energy savings goal.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Uliff, I thought that that was correct, but I just wanted to confirm that. And I say that not out of a gotcha for Representative Westrum, but merely actually to highlight that we are in this transition from the traditional spending requirements to the energy savings requirements. And I think the 5% is a little bit of a, at some point here, we're going to have to deal with the fact that we have this spending requirement and a little bit of the camel's nose that we've allowed under the tent, and the entire tent then has moved over to an energy savings other than the spending camping campground slot or whatever. I can't remember what it's called, but I'll let that metaphor die. Mr. Chair and Representative Westrum, I do think that the goal of CIP is to slow down the meter through energy efficiency and conservation activities. My limited understanding of seabed projects is that they're traditionally well outside the meter and larger projects. I know that Representative Westrum has been a big advocate of seabed, and I appreciate that zealous advocacy. I don't think this fits the spirit of CIP. But I'm going to ask members to oppose the A2 amendment, but I will tell Representative Westrum to please hold his breath because you might be surprised with your next amendment.
Further discussion. Representative
Mr. Chair, you speak as if you know the outcome of this First Amendment, Representative.
Mr. Chair, merely expressing my own position.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to belabor this. Representative Kalin, conservation is also using renewable products to generate electricity in our communities, distributed generation, assumedly, because it's probably more in different communities, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how much more conservation-minded you could get than that, but it does similar to what Representative Downey's amendment would allow the gas companies to do, as I see it. But I'm happy to visit with you. I'd encourage you to vote for it, and if there's ways we can fix it, I'm happy to fix it along the way, et cetera, et cetera. So I would urge members to vote for it. It's one more opportunity or option we give to our utility companies on efforts they're already making towards their RES, towards having these projects occur in Representative Falk's district or Magnus' district or Beard's district or wherever. And so that's why I bring it forward. I think we need to be serious. Stay out of your district. Funny you didn't say that when you had a project a few years ago there, but malt biomass.
No subsidy, no mandate to get it.
So, but Mr. Chair, members, I would urge your support, and Representative Kalin, I pledge to you, I'd be happy to work with you in fixing it along the way if you've got better suggestions rather than throwing a knife in it right now.
Representative Beard.
Now, Mr. Chair, I just want to apologize for the comment without going through the chair. To be clear, the biomass project in my district had no legislative mandate and had no subsidy from the government. It was strictly a business decision that made good sense, and it's moving along swimmingly, so thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment. Representative Westrum, I think the concern that I have with this amendment is basically what Representative Kalin expressed. I'm totally in sympathy with the goal that you have here. I'm not so sure about the mechanism. And I don't think we've had a response from Representative Kalin about working to accomplish this in some
Mr.
way, but
Chair,
I'm certainly interested in
Mr. Chair, let me throw this olive branch out. Representative Kalin, are you all interested in working on this concept potentially between now and the floor or another committee? And if so, I'd be inclined to just withdraw it and not break our trend.
Representative Gale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I do think it's the mechanism that's the weak spot here in the scheme. What I'd like to do is actually talk to you a lot more about the distributed generation piece, and it's the seabed issue that is getting me tripped up here. So I'd like to talk, and I think that the distributed generation that is truly not even having to be dispatched to the distribution grid, let alone go through an MISO interconnect agreement, if it's on a home or a commercial business and it truly is, or an institution, and it truly is slowing down the meter, then I think we can achieve the goal of SIP and it fits. So that's just my concern, is that as soon as you get outside that meter, you end up having, on the electricity issue, you end up being outside of the SIP goal. You know, Representative Westrom, you had said that the Representative Downey's biomethane, which I supported because the author and I have talked, or the chair and I have talked about it a little bit, so I do have the same qualms, but as we talked about with the Centerpoint natural gas issue, I do recognize that they have much different challenges. I think the electricity folks will be able to meet their SIP energy savings a lot more aggressively than natural gas, but I will always keep talking to you about this because I'm interested in getting the distributed generation workable, and if this is the right mechanism for that, I'm happy to keep working with you on it.
And Representative Westrom, I don't know if Representative Kalin exactly answered your question or not, but I'll tell you that I am very much interested in working with you on this, and we can get this resolved. I'd be happy to entertain an amendment on the House floor.
Well, Mr. Chair, with that, I did feel like Representative Kalin gave me more of a politician answer, but
you're more of a lawyer-to-be answer, is what it was.
But, Mr. Chair, I will withdraw this, and I guess I would also ask those parties interested in the audience to visit about this, because I have heard this idea more and more from different utility folks, and if there's a way we can give them some relief or some refocus of some of their SIP efforts, I think it's a okay way to go. So I'll withdraw it at this time, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom withdraws the A2 amendment and I believe moves the A3 amendment.
Chair, I will move the A3 amendment. Maybe I'm better off not explaining it. I think it's self-explanatory, Mr. Chair. The hour's late. Representative Kalin, any comments you have on this basically a rebate that could be used for solar, thermal types, or other renewable energy type replacement heating systems for homeowners?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom.
Representative Kalin.
A little bit of the second verse statement is the first in terms of the specific mechanism within SIP, but I think that you're introducing a new concept, or at least new to me, within SIP that's really worth talking about, and that is addressing the heat issue with specific required rebates. From the standalone stoves, geothermal and solar thermal, I think looking at requiring utilities to provide rebates for these technologies may be the mechanism to go. What I'd suggest is that I'd urge members to vote for the amendment, but Representative Westrom, want to keep working with you and with Mr. Eliff to see if we can make it work as a required program within SIP rather than a spending requirement. One thought, just Mr. Chair, language that does stick out to me, just want to point out on line 1.12, the solar thermal project, except that no rebate may be awarded to a solar thermal project that heats water. Just want to make sure that we are not the federal government here and banning things like swimming pools that are most cost effective. You can have radiant in-floor heating from hot water or other sources or other mechanisms, I should say, that are very cost effective. And so we'll want to make sure that we don't get too specific here with the language and we can make it work.
Representative Westrom, I'm wondering if you would regard it as a somewhat friendly
Mr.
amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would take that as a friendly amendment if Mr. Eloff can...
Well, I was offering a different friendly amendment.
Okay. No, I'll jump the gun, Mr. Chair. Just go ahead.
I do like this amendment, but I'm wondering if you would be willing on line 1.6 to delete the 10% and substitute 5%.
Mr. Chair, I'll take that as a friendly amendment, too.
Well, members, I would move that amendment then on line 1.6 of the A3 amendment to strike the word 10 and insert the word 5. You can incorporate that, I guess. If
Mr.
You
Chair, I will incorporate that in my amendment.
Very well.
And Mr. Chair, to Representative Kalin's issue, I'm willing to either look at that as a friendly amendment now, or perhaps Representative Kalin and I should just speak off committee time, and we can fix it if that language is innocuous. Representative Kalin, any preference?
Representative Kalin and Representative Westerman, if you'd be willing to do that, I think that would be the preferable course at this time. I think we've taxed Mr. Eliff enough to... I don't think that would be necessary at this time.
Very good. I'll renew my motion then, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion to the amendment as amended. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I just, Representative Westrom, ask the reason for not including solar thermal project that heats water? Because I've seen some of the technologies where you can do a preheating with solar thermal to supplement or replace some of your heating, water heating costs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, I don't know if I have a good answer for you, to tell you the truth. I think when this original, this is a version of a concept that's been around for a few years, a different style or a different, and I don't know for sure. I think it was to focus on really the heat and not other aspects, but I don't know that there's a good reason for it.
Well, members, I guess that does get us back to the question of the amendment. And Mr. Eloff, the reason that I was somewhat hesitant to just take that on right now is the definition in 216B.2411. Can you tell us what that is?
Mr. Chair, that definition reads as follows. Qualifying solar thermal project means a flat plate or evacuated tube that meets the requirements of Section 216C.25 with a fixed orientation that collects the sun's radiant energy and transfers it to a storage medium for distribution as energy to heat or cool air or water, but does not include equipment used to heat water at a residential property. One, for domestic use if less than one half of the energy used for that purpose is derived from the sun, or two, for use in a hot tub or swimming pool.
So, Mr. Eloff, if we did attempt to deal with these concerns simply by deleting line 1.12, it wouldn't really address the concerns that people have expressed in their entirety. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, that would still leave the definition in 216B.2411 allows to heat or cool air or water.
With the exception.
Right. I mean, that would be what this would refer to if we deleted line 1.12.
I'll tell you what, members, let's just vote on this amendment, and we'll deal with this one here when our brains are functioning a little bit more clearly. Representative Western renews this motion that the A3 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A12 amendment.
That motion is before us. Representative Falk, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a small technical change which is brought to my attention dealing with county permitting of projects. Currently, counties are allowed to permit wind energy projects which are classified as small wind energy conversion systems, which are classified as being 5 megawatts or less, but the caveat that counties can permit up to 25 megawatt projects if it's on or before July 1st, 2009. What this does is just goes and changes that definition of the wind energy conversion system for small wind energy conversion system up to 25 megawatts and allows counties to permit. And this is brought to my attention by some people trying to move forward with projects who are concerned that the counties might not be able to do the permitting, which they thought had was going to be the case. It's keep the control in the local areas where the projects are being developed. I think it's good government to allow the county boards and their county permitting people or zoning officer, if they choose, to do the permitting because they understand the requirements, the setbacks, they understand the nature of the project, I think, better than the Public Utilities Commission would on these smaller projects. And we put in a place that a recommended setback of at least 1.1 times the max, or at equal to 1.1 times the maximum tip height of a rotor blade measured from ground level when the blade's in the vertical position. This was some standard language or concepts used in the original permitting of projects, I believe, in southwestern Minnesota. I think Lincoln County had this for a while, and I believe in Representative Magnus's area they had similar language, but then counties have been able to adopt their own standards. But this is once again allowing counties to permit 25 megawatt projects or less. There is a sunset on this, that ability, July 1st of 2009, and we'd like to keep these projects which are in the process able to go forward. And I think this is just the way to allow that to happen.
Discussion to the amendment. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this amendment? Seeing none, Representative Falk renews his motion that the A12 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Falk, does that render the A11 amendment?
It doesn't, sir. I will not move the A11 amendment.
Next, then, would be the H6 amendment, Representative Bly.
I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
This motion is before us. Representative Bly, to the amendment.
Mr. Hilke, I bring this amendment on behalf of constituents and landowners who are constituents of mine and also in neighboring districts who found themselves in the path of a pipeline recently and now find themselves in the path of a utility line that's going across their properties as well. And in part this has to do with the eminent domain issue. Just for some history, and those of you who have been here for a while, I know probably know about this, others who are not. In June 2005, a case in Connecticut, the Kelo case, came forward and went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided in that decision that increasing the tax base was a permitted public purpose and proper use of eminent domain authority. And taking property from one private citizen to give to another for redevelopment purposes was considered okay. However, in that decision, they also established that state legislatures could define limitations and rules that would govern eminent domain. And this legislature in 2006, responding to that decision, did pass some laws that put in place processes that would protect property owners in certain ways, but proceeded then to exempt public service corporations from those provisions. And I guess my point in bringing this forward is that I think, you know, we do pass laws and see how they work out, and when we find out if they are or are not working, we maybe have to address some issues. And the experience that I've been visiting with my constituents about convinces me that this is something we do need to reconsider and look at. I think they have found that they have been their sense is that they've been treated unfairly and borne the expense of these projects in ways that wouldn't have been necessary had there been in place some protections for them as were passed for other government entities and things like that. So that's the reason for my bringing the amendment, and I don't know if there are folks here who wanted to speak to some of their experiences or not, but I don't know if we want to take the time to do that. The two issues that I'm addressing, I did bring a bill to this effect, and because of deadlines and issues that made it really impossible for me to get the bill heard in civil justice and energy, I was unable to move it forward. And I guess because I want to make sure that it's loud and clear that if entities out there are not treating people fairly, that it is something that we will have to reconsider. The two statutes that I identify in the amendment deal with payment of property owners' attorney fees and making sure that there are ways that they can get those fees taken care of, because I think if you can't do that, it really inhibits your ability to challenge or to have someone speak on your behalf if you feel that the offer that's being made by the utilities for the land that they're seizing is unfair. The second provision deals with the process that sets up negotiations and appraisals, and it asks that both sides get an appraisal and that there be some negotiations and that there also are some reimbursements for some of those fees. And so that's the reason for bringing the amendment.
And Representative Bly, as you know, I've had a discussion not only with you but with Chairman Mullery, in whose possession the bill currently resides, and I believe that we are in agreement that we would be willing to hold a joint hearing, at least an informational hearing after the deadline on this issue. And I think you know also from our conversations that I think this is much too large an issue to be something that we can take up in the form of an amendment to a relatively modest policy bill.
I understand, and I understand that by my bringing forward the amendment, it really disrupts the process that you're going through, and I will, for that reason, withdraw it. But I also want to make the statement that the disruption that my constituents and the property owners in neighboring districts experience is far greater than that when they're confronted with this issue. And I just want to make sure that people understand that this is an important issue and that it shouldn't be overlooked. And I do appreciate your willingness to take up the conversation, and I do acknowledge that it is a much larger issue with greater implications. So I will withdraw that amendment. And
that would be the A6 amendment?
Correct. And also because the A8 amendment would have addressed one of these issues, it really becomes irrelevant. So we're just going to talk about the A7 amendment then.
Very well, Representative Bly. Do you wish to move the A7 amendment?
I do. I would like to move the A7 amendment. And looking at
that motion then is before us, Representative Bly.
Thank you. And looking at it, I'm wondering if I made a mistake in talking with Mr. Eloff when we drafted, and I asked him to change the fee that for appraisal and reimbursement would be from $500 to $1,000, but I think actually looking at the history of this, in the past it was $1,500, so I'm wondering if I could make an oral amendment to increase it by $1,000 so that it would be $1,500 instead of $500. So I'd like to make that oral amendment.
You can incorporate that into your amendment, sir. Okay. That's why that will be duly noted that you're striking $1,000 and inserting $1,500. So Representative Beard, to the amendment.
If Representative Bligh has done. Yes, yes. I just have a couple of comments. And first of all, to acknowledge just how emotionally charged this issue is. This is a serious issue, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments of a few moments ago. And to Representative Bligh for the same and for withdrawing the first two. Those of us that have been here for a while have had some history with eminent domain proceedings, and I think I'm clear, or to clarify, when we talk about what we did after the Kelo decision here in 2005-2006, what we did was we specifically directed that law, and the law, I think, Representative Johnson at that time, Representative Johnson carried, was very wide-reaching and had a great deal of concern from bipartisanly and from all levels of government. But we did narrow the scope of that to concern its impact on the ability for a local unit of government, any unit of government, to take someone's property for the purposes of economic development, redevelopment, you know, specifically. And we didn't even prohibit that, members. We put a high barrier and high standards on it. So it could still be done, but the payments were more prompt, more sure, and more rewarding for the people who were being displaced merely for what we felt was somebody, a unit of government wanting somebody else there. To the point, though, of public service corporations, and I'm struggling, I'm looking through my notes, and maybe if others in the audience or here can remember why we specifically exempted public service corporations, that is an important thing for us to have a discussion about, Mr. Chair and Representative Bligh, as we move ahead, because public service corporations aren't only pipeline companies and power line companies. They're also airports and waterways and sewer districts and water districts and things like that that serve a public good under tight regulation. So it's not quite the same as tearing down a big neighborhood in Richfield and building Best Buy headquarters. It's a little different than that. And I remember that discussion, but we can have it again, and we should dust off those notes and talk about that. Having said this, I remember sitting through some angst down in Rochester after we did the Rock 52 project when these kind of things came up, too. And I think, and I'm speaking from memory here, that we did bump that a fee for appraisal services. And that's what this is for, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I think we bumped that to $1,500 there, too, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. But remember, it seems like a good thing to do, an appropriate thing. And Mr. Chairman, I just had to one time say, I think I'd like to support this amendment. So thank you for letting me talk about that. And Representative Bligh, thank you for your thoughtfulness in bringing this sensitive subject forward. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Is there further discussion to the amendment? Keeping in mind that ringing endorsement, Representative Bligh renews his motion that the A7 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Johnson, do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. It's an oral amendment. And this is going to occur on page 4. After the period on line 28, insert the following words. This section does not authorize a city-requested facilities surcharge. And that amendment occurs, of course, under
Section 4 was dealing with the University Avenue Light Rail Transit Utility Zone.
Mr. Eulis, do you have an amendment?
Could you read that one more time?
Certainly. This section does not authorize a city-requested facilities surcharge.
And Mr. Eulis, does that fit where Representative Johnson wishes to insert it?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson, you want to explain the amendment?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Briefly to the point, what this amendment does is clarify for the cities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, that the cost recovery mechanism we're authorizing the PUC to approve is not a special facility surcharge, which is used for city-specific requests.
Questions from members? Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Johnson renews this motion that the amendment as recorded by Mr. Eulis be adopted. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hackworth, I think you have the K-21 amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would move the A-21 amendment.
Representative Hackworth moves the A-21 amendment. That motion is before us. Representative Hackworth, do you want to address the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment refers to the light rail project and moving utilities, and I think we heard testimony earlier about how much extra this is going to cost in this section. To do all these new modernization and updates that are in this Section 4, Subdivision 7D. And all the amendment says, Mr. Chairman, is that they'll be able to recoup their costs for removing and reinstalling to accommodate for the mass transit. It doesn't say that they can update and put in new things and extra things and the most modern technology, etc. I don't know if I thought that maybe Mr. Eulis was trying to get my attention. Okay. But that's to the amendment.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Johnson?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd speak against it because it effectively end the project that's being presented in Section 4. And it's a project clearly that needs to go forward. What the project does is provide in a very systematic and defined way advances the use of renewable energy, conservation, use of electric vehicles, and allows the opportunity to install infrastructure that's going to integrate digital information and controls, and hence improve efficiency of the whole electrical grid. It's a project whose time is right, particularly since we're going to be tearing up University Avenue. What better time to think forward about what our energy needs are than this particular project? So I would urge members to vote no to the amendment.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak for or against this amendment? Seeing no one and no further discussion, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion that the A-21 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt on that one. All those in favor of the A-21 amendment, please raise your hand.
Chair, remember, those that abstain can abstain, too.
I'm sure they're aware of that, Representative Weston. We have that count. All those opposed to the amendment, please raise your hand. There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Hoppe, A15 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A15 amendment. Mr. Chair, with the A15 amendment, we're looking on page 2, starting on page 2 in the section 3 of the bill. The substantive change, or I guess all of the change, would be on page 3, lines 3.17 to 3.20. And I guess when I look at this section and I read it and reread it and read it again, I don't really understand what it means. When we're saying the commission shall provide an incentive that makes effective implementation of cost-effective conservation the most profitable resource choice for public utilities, I just have a question as to what that means, and I'd like to take that whole section out of the bill. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, I don't know, I know we heard some testimony on this. I don't know if we have anybody here tonight that would like to come down and speak to this.
Representative Hoppe, this is a provision that was included in, from Representative Kalin's bill. We can have him address it, and I will certainly ask if anybody wishes to testify. And in fact, while Representative Kalin is addressing the question, anybody that wishes to testify, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe and members, ask you to oppose the A15 amendment. For this reason, I think the discussion we had initially on my bill, as Representative Hoppe brought forward, was the impact on ratepayers. And the reality is that supporting the A15 amendment will actually make will support a more costly approach to providing electricity. That is because our current rate structure and incentive mechanism encourages especially our investor-owned utilities to seek the most expensive option, which is often these days natural gas being the most permitted new power plants, which is significantly more expensive as a resource than conservation, to the tune of as much as 8 to 10 times. Natural gas becoming more and more expensive as a power source, conservation and efficiency being a resource that costs usually a penny to 2 pennies a kilowatt hour. In fact, I believe the utilities own filing in the Big Stone 2 proceeding was at 0.99 cents a kilowatt hour. So the language here is to urge the Public Utilities Commission to work towards a rate structure and incentive structure that actually allows investor-owned utilities to get a rate of return competitive within their financial structure to achieve and invest in conservation long and well beyond the 1.5% savings goal. I think that this goes, again, Mr. Chair, to the point that I brought up early this year, which was that I believe we are moving from a commodity model to a service model, and that we should do everything we can to make our financial mechanisms incent the cheapest and most reliable and cleanest way to keep the lights on, and that is conservation and efficiency.
Deputy Commissioner, Director, and Acting Reliability Administrator Glahn, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I am Bill Glahn from the Office of Energy Security. I appreciate the opportunity to address this amendment. Things are going so well so far. we have a number of concerns regarding this section of the bill, and would tend to support Representative Hoppe's amendment for the following reasons. Actually, I heard the discussion Mr. Kalin just gave, and I agree with quite a bit of it, moving away from the model of utilities as commodity providers to utilities as service providers, providing incentives for utilities to use the least cost resource, regardless of other factors. And I've expressed the sentiment to our state's investor utilities, and I hope they have received the message that we're willing to work with them on providing of such appropriate incentives. And in fact, just not to pick on NSP, because all the state's investor-owned utilities are subject to this provision, but an example of Northern States Power Company on the electric side, they spend something on the order of $50 million a year on costs associated with their electric FIT program, and they receive something on the order of $15 million in financial incentives to do so. You know, and perhaps that's not quite rich enough to achieve the objectives that we have for promoting conservation. And we have built into our incentive mechanisms a renewal, in that every few years we go and look at them to see if they are still achieving the goals that we set out in Chapter 216B. And if not, other provisions or other mechanisms would be more appropriate or more effective. And we have such a process underway at the moment, and I understand there's some frustration that we're past the deadline for working through that process, but we're committed to working through the process, having all the stakeholders involved, and achieving a set of financial incentives that does accomplish the many different goals we're trying to achieve. As for the particular bit of legislation here, lines 3.18 through 3.20, what I get hung up on are the words "shall provide" and the words "most profitable." Shall provide, last word of 318, provide the first word of 319. And we had a process we went through approximately 10 years ago on a related subject called the loss margins issue, where we had a situation where some of them, not all of them, but some of our state's utilities were receiving a financial incentive associated with their SIP program that resulted in, through no intention of their own, an over-earning situation where the utilities were earning profits well in excess of the level that the Public Utilities Commission had set as a just and reasonable level. And so in revamping that, that's how we came up with this 30% incentive mechanism. And so there's nothing in this provision that I would see would provide ratepayers protection against that over-earning situation. When you say the commission shall provide it, it seems to, at least in my non-lawyer reading of it, preclude the protections the ratepayers enjoy under other provisions of 216B, just and reasonable rates, any doubts as to rates settled in favor of the ratepayer. And then the most profitable resource, Mr. Chair, members, to be honest, I don't know where I would begin trying to figure that out. We set a profit. Grossly oversimplify a process, we set a profit level for utilities based on almost innumerable number of factors, and we come up with a single number for the return on equity. So I don't know how you would begin breaking that down by business line or generation type or any other way you could slice it and dice it. So I would see a great practical matter, a great practical problem with this provision in 318 through 320, trying to implement it in a way that's fair to not just the ratepayers, a fair way to promote our renewable energy objective or our energy efficiency objectives, and a way to provide the proper incentives for utilities and allow their shareholders to benefit as well. So, Mr. Chair, those are my views on the amendment.
That's Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have had some, given this a lot of thought, and Representative Hoppe, I appreciate the much more low-key approach you've taken today than compared to when we first had the bill before us. And I think that it really is an issue of it's a very complex issue, and I've been working over this quite a bit and trying to figure out what other states are doing, what other economies are even doing. Outside of our own, outside of our own being the North American, I guess, to see how we can really make sure that the most cost-effective resource becomes the most financially remunerative. To bring out a conversation that Director Guan and I had, for utilities to really seek the lowest cost resource so that we are not, so we actually are protecting ratepayers, protecting the grid reliability, and protecting the investment opportunity. I think that what we have in on page three today represents a strong step forward. I don't think that it is complete. I don't think that it works 100%. I appreciate Xcel Energy, the PUC, other stakeholders continuing to work this issue. One of the things that Director Glahn and I talked about is perhaps we need to crack out a thesaurus to see if there actually are better ways of describing this. But there may actually be other mechanisms that achieve this goal than the incentive. It may actually be go to the core of the certificate of need statute or our rate case structure. But I do believe that this is a step in the right direction. And Representative Hoppe, I pledge to you to continue this conversation because it is complex, and I'd like to have the opportunity to sit down with many of the stakeholders together to continue the conversation. I know Mr. Evans is here, but I do ask that we keep the language in the bill because I think it's a nice step in the right direction, but I will, I'm happy to convene whatever, facilitate whatever conversation around this for any member and any member of the public to understand it better and see if we can have a workable solution.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kalen, I appreciate what you're saying, and I guess I'm following you, and I understand what we want to do, and I like conservation, and we're trying to essentially hold the utility harmless. But I go back to one thing. If somebody in their business or their home implements conservation measures so they're using less electricity, but they're still paying the same amount because we raised the rates to compensate the utility, what incentives do businesses and individuals have to conserve? I mean, if we put conservation measures in, so their usage goes down, but, you know, the rate goes up there and their costs stay the same or go higher, I mean, I know what you're trying to do, and I think it does deserve more discussion. I just don't know how that helps, you know, the ratepayers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, I think what you're describing is what we discussed and have a pilot project is for natural gas, and that is the decoupling issue where we guarantee and have a pilot project is for natural gas, and that is the decoupling issue where we guarantee a rate of return regardless of sales, where you're if you save, let's say, $100 worth of gas, that you would only achieve $96 or $98 worth of that savings because of the lost margin in effect being spread out. My hope is that tools like that end up trying to fit a square peg into a triangular hole because they end up fitting two different financial models. What I would like to do is to see that it is so much in the utility's interest that they blow well past that 1.5% mandate, and that we can actually remove mandates like the SIP mandate because it is so attractive of an investment and really match up. Representative Beard is smiling because I think we may find some common ground on this once we go deep. But that's my hope, is that we make conservation such a financially attractive investment that they do get a return on investment for pursuing the cheapest resource, and that the ratepayers see that rather than a 10-cent a kilowatt hour gas plant or 7-cent a kilowatt hour coal plant with carbon on top of it, if that's what happens in the global marketplace, that really you pursue the 2 or 3 cent efficiency investment because it competes with the others. I think we'll need to keep talking about this. But I do ask folks to support or oppose, the 815 amendment.
Mr. Evans, did you wish to testify?
Mr. Chair, my name is Rick Evans. I'm with Xcel Energy. I just want to clarify a couple of things. First of all, as Representative Kalen has indicated, we are very interested in working with the department, with the members of this committee, and any other interested stakeholders to make sure that we get this right. Just to very broadly speak to the topic here, when we're required by the state, as we are, to spend significant amounts of money on SIP programs. Essentially what we're doing, what we're being asked to do is spend a lot of money to get people to use less of our product. I don't know any other business in the state that is required to spend money to get their customers to use less of their product. And we deal with that in the current structure with an incentive designed by the department to give us a financial incentive to do that. We've been trying through the process that Commissioner Vaughn referenced to improve that process, to make it a more profitable service for us. We would like to get in the business of conservation and make it a business model, and that's the reason that we support this language here, because we want it to be more profitable for us to do conservation measures than to build more generation plants. The only other thing I would like to say is we are still subject to enormous regulation to prevent against over-earning. It is not our intention here to put ourselves in a position of over-earning, and we'd welcome any language that would make sure that the situation that did exist several years ago did not recur. But even without that, our regulators have tremendous authority to call us in and adjust our rates if there's a situation where we're over-earning. And so we support this provision in the bill and would like the committee to support it as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Lockhead?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Lauren Lockhead from Otter Tail Power. I'd like to echo Mr. Evans' comments and try to win my friend Representative Hoppe over on this issue. As Mr. Evans pointed out, we're being asked to give up pieces of our business. We get paid in our business. We only earn money by earning assets. That's how utilities are regulated. And we know we can't own nuclear assets, although we saw a ray of light on that front this today earlier. We know, we don't know, but we may not be able to own coal-based assets. We hope we can own transmission assets. But as we move toward making our 1.5% goal, and by the way, in the Big Stone proceeding, we did assume that we would every year make our 1.5% goal starting, I think, in 2012. So that was an assumption that was made by the Big Stone partners. But as we continue toward making that goal, my discussion with Representative Kalin about this, and I discussed this with the chair as well, is why can't we think of conservation as an asset also? Conservation today costs about a penny, as Representative Kalin points out, and in the future we'll have to spend a lot more to do it, but it'll cost still about 2 cents. Well, isn't a 2 cent kilowatt hour asset still a good deal for all of the ratepayers? We think it would be. So we would look forward to discussions as well with Representative Hoppe and others, as well as Representative Kalin, to discuss how do we make, I don't know if most profitable is the right wording, but I think the spirit is that you would make it at least as profitable as conventional kinds of activities. I think that was what it intended. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Lodge? Seeing none, is there anyone else that wishes to testify for or against the amendment? Any further discussions to the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kalin.
I know we've had a lot of discussion about this, but I just thought that I would, I may be the only one in the room who has this device, but this new technology that allows, you don't need a wire to make a phone call.
What?
It's really cool. But a little bit of latitude, Mr. Chair, that when we turn on our cell phones, when we buy our cell phones and sign up for the plan, what we do is we choose a level of service. You know, essentially, how intense are we going to use our phone? How much are we going to use that infrastructure? And I don't have unlimited minutes. because Representative Magnus, I do try to conserve and be efficient in my use of my minutes. But I do have to say that that imagine that we set up the business model such that that our cellular phone companies only made their most revenue out of extending
their number of towers and their infrastructure beyond what was needed, because that's how their businesses work. That would make it more and more expensive to use that network, and there'd be more and more reasons to put more towers up. What we're talking about with electricity is that we need to be recognize that we have a 19th and 20th century model for a 21st century level of infrastructure, and to make it financially viable for utilities to pursue the cellular structure rather than this need to get more and more assets rather than preserve what they have and make the system work for us when we flip on our lights.
Representative
Hopkins. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to let this go, but to that point, Representative Kalin, you don't have unlimited minutes because the plan you have costs less. You're conserving, therefore you're saving money. You're a consumer saving money. Where are the consumers saving money under this program? They conserve. They pay the same amount.
Well, just one correction on that. Representative Hoppe, they don't pay the same amount. You achieve almost 100%. Without decoupling, the individual ratepayer receives 100% or 99.99% of the benefit of that savings. It's only under decoupling, which I think would be a real problem if we had massive conservation, which I would like to see us have. And this would... This piece prevents that situation from happening.
I think Representative Poppy renews his motion that the A-15 amendment be adopted. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Magnus, A-16.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A-16 amendment to House File 863, delete all amendments.
That motion is before us, Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I think historically RE has been getting $3 million, and I note in here it's $5 million, not only for now, or in the beginning 2011, but forever until the money runs out, I guess. So just wanted to have a little discussion about that. I don't know if anyone from RE is here, but
Mr. I don't know if they are either, but Representative Magnus, I think the $3 million reference that you're making is not exactly correct. 2 years ago, and maybe Ms. Soderbergh can enlighten us a little bit on this, but I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, the situation was that the funding that they had was I'm not sure I'm remembering it right either, but the $3 million was what was left over from their initial funding source that we augmented, but that was to bring it back up to the $5 million level that they had been accustomed to. And I was responsible for moving this into this funding source 2 years ago because I think we all agreed that the work that they were doing was really cutting edge and valuable work at the university, and the problem that they had expressed to me was that their funding was always something that was up in the air. Every legislative session, they didn't know whether they were going to be funded or at what level. I wanted to just move their funding into the base in this committee out of the general fund, and we didn't have the funds to do that. Yeah. So we did choose this source to keep the project that they had started going, and I think in retrospect it was a good idea considering the state of the general fund currently. But the question is, it isn't an increase in their funding. It's maintaining it at the level that it had been. And, you know, I guess the question would be, are there a lot more likely sources of that kind of research available to us in the state that we would want to fund instead? And my answer is I don't really think so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and you and I both serve on the Next Gen board, and we work closely with RE, and I'm sure we share a certain amount of respect for them. But, Mr. Chairman, the past couple of years we've had some problems with the U in the sense that, on one hand, they're using some of this money to fund some projects that come out, for example, and bash ethanol from corn. On the other hand, Mr. Chairman, the same group, RE, is funding some projects out of the University of Nebraska. That is what comes out right after our University of Minnesota folks beat up ethanol. A Nebraska report comes out with a glowing report of corn ethanol. And I don't see anything in here that deals with the agricultural products except for plant and animal material. It doesn't specify it. And Mr. Chairman, it brings me back to the partnership that we have with Agriculture and the Energy Committee, and we do the agricultural special, the so-called University of Minnesota Ag Special, starts out in the Ag Committee, and then we send it over to the Higher Ed Committee, and that, I believe, is about $52 or $53 million. But we're much more specific and much more focused in what we want the University of Minnesota to do because of some of the very things I pointed out. One hand doing this, the other hand doing that. And we spent a lot of time in the Ag Committee being very specific about the products we want studied. We certainly respect their knowledge and experience there, and their ability to do things that you and I both agree, and certainly the Ag Committee agreed, we have nowhere else to go to here in Minnesota. We need to use that. But when we get to where we get conflicting reports coming out of the same fund of money, I thought I'd throw up the $3 million and see whose attention we got. Because there's a lot of folks that are very concerned about this situation out there. And that's my point. I don't think... I don't like, number one, funding both sides of the argument, and number two, I don't believe the Ag Committee for sure would be that supportive of some of this language in here. They would like to see better language in there, in the descriptive language of the fund. Well, that's my point in bringing the amendment up, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Magnus, I'd certainly be happy to discuss with you any revisions in the language that you want to consider. But I guess I kind of disagree with you about funding both sides of the question. I think that's kind of the nature of pure research, and I think that we have gotten away considerably in our research institutions from doing that kind of pure research into research that really is inspired by one side or the other and attempts to produce whatever results it's paid for. They got paid for, and I'm not so sure that it's not a good idea to let these guys follow their own instincts and come up with what they come up with, and then we see where it goes from there.
Well, and yes, I do agree with that, Mr. Chairman. But the other point is, and it came up in the Agriculture Committee, there's a lot of other groups that send funding to the University of Minnesota. Millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. And they're not happy either with what goes on over there. So I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help this agency because I do believe in them, as you do, Mr. Chairman. But I do recognize that when you do these sort of things, you're not going to always get a result that you maybe think personally or your entity thinks is great. But we have had more than one case of this thing, and again, you're seeing that I'm just saying what the sense is in the other communities out there that are sending millions of dollars to the U. So that's my point.
Well, Representative Magnus, I'm perfectly willing to continue the discussion with you, and I think you have some valid points, but I'm not going to support your amendment. Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, and I just want to echo what Representative Hilty said in terms of science and saying science isn't politics. You don't fund one side, you fund trying to figure out the truth about something, and it can take a while and you can have conflicting reports about what that is. And I think hopefully as a government funding, we're not funding a specific policy direction, but helping find information, help us make those decisions as best as we can. And I think this group does help us do that very well.
No, I'm not.
I really think that's interesting, Representative, because you're basically telling me it's okay to fund this side with the $5 million. But it's not a political argument. What I just said is we're not funding the other side of the argument either. You know, I said we're not funding some other key sources of renewable energy that are important to us with this, because we're not specific enough in the language, is my point, Representative.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Magnus, do you wish to renew your motion that the A16 amendment be adopted? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Motion is not adopted. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Do we have any? What do we have left? Yes, would you do that? Please, Representative Beard.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, I'll move the A23 amendment. We're almost there. Mr. Chairman, while you're looking for
it. Before, if you want to
tell you what I know about it.
Amendments, Representative Beard.
Members, this was a very brief bill that Representative Seifert brought. The city of Marshall, down southwestern part of the state, has a, well, they call it the Merit Center. You can see it right there in the amendment. Whenever we're dealing with some of the infrastructure that's being built, windmills, towers 300 feet tall with 100-foot blades on them or 90-foot blades, stuff like that, and the ethanol facilities, search, rescue, fire suppression, emergency procedures, and things like that require some unique and specialized training. And apparently the good folks in Marshall have a training center there that trains people right in the heart of our probably most intense renewable energy section of the state. So they're asking $300,000. And Mr. Chairman, I got to tell you, I don't know exactly where it's $300,000 from. But
Representative Beard, if my understanding is correct, and Mr. Soderberg can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this is money that was appropriated in the bonding bill last year.
All right.
And this is just a change in the language regarding the appropriation. That it's not actually calling for any money. Is that correct, Mr. Soderberg? Yes. Representative Westrum, Representative Beard, in your absence, moves the A23 amendment dealing with Representative Seifert's project in Marshall. Members,
so don't screw it up.
The reservation I have about this amendment, when we had this before us and we made recommendations to the bonding committee, we said we didn't feel, we didn't oppose the amendment, but we didn't feel that it was really an issue that we should even weigh in on, because we didn't know what the implications were as far as the bonding. And I have not talked to Chair Houseman. I don't know why this was not included in the bonding bill, but the reservation I have about including it in this bill until we can get some assurances, I don't know if putting this language in our bill would cause it, in essence, to be somehow a bonding bill that would require 81 votes to pass.
Mr. Chair, wouldn't it be nice to have 81 votes on your bill if it was needed? Mr. Chair?
Representative Western.
On a more serious note, what I'm wondering is if could we put the language in, and in the event that is the case, I think Representative Beard and myself and others would be going to pull the language out. I understand your concern if that would be the case.
Representative,
I don't know the answer to that.
I did try to get an answer about that this afternoon when I became aware that this amendment was going to be offered and have been able to at this point. I would propose as an alternative that we just hold on to this amendment, and if you want to bring it up in finance when we are able to deal with that question, I think Representative Seifert. But if you want to offer it in finance, that's fine with me. I really don't oppose this, but I feel uncomfortable about putting it in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know, are you on finance?
I am.
So are you indicating a willingness to speak in support of it if it doesn't mess up the bill in the regards we've talked about?
Well, as I said, I don't know enough about the issue even to say I wholeheartedly support it, but I certainly do not oppose it because I think this is just a simple correction that
sure.
It seems reasonable to make, and that as long as that's the issue, I am willing to support it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
prefer that I withdraw the amendment then, and we'll let Representative Akbar take it up in the finance committee.
That would be my preference, Representative.
Done, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Beard withdraws the A23 amendment. Is there anyone who claims ownership of the A13 amendment? No takers on that. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 863 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Finance. Members, thank you for your patience. This meeting is adjourned.